Ladies and gentlemen, now it's time. Your host for this evening, live from Studio 76 in Valrico, Florida, Derek Old School Fournier.
So I give zero f-
Hey Browns, Mike Polk, season ticket holder. Killer game in Houston today.
Well, thank God we built you. What a blessing for the community.
You are wasting valuable space on our majestic shoreline, and what do we get out of it from you? 10 miserable games a year, including 2 preseason games that I have to pay for, and 1 shitty Kenny Chesney concert. Do you understand that it is actually statistically harder for a team to be this consistently bad than it is for them to occasionally accidentally be good?
The probability is staggering.
Did you happen to see that Packers-Chargers game today? It's like they're playing a different sport than you are. And here's what you have to understand. We don't even expect you to be good. We just want you to be watchable. Do you have any idea how low our expectations are? We don't expect you to win the Super Bowl. We just want you to look better than a Division III high school team.
And listen, I know that there are way more important things in life than football, but you are supposed to be our pleasant distraction from those things.
But all we do is pay you money to put us in a bad mood every week.
You are a factory of sadness!
I'll see you Sunday.
I don't know if it gets any better than that video, guys. Welcome to What the Buck. But Mike Polk and that video just absolutely does not ever get old. Welcome to What the Buck. There are a number of other audio or videos that he's done as well that are equally funny, but that one is sort of the quintessential Cleveland Browns video. It's particularly apt and fitting given the fact that we're going to be playing the Browns, and it's funny. Majestic shorefront, right, Calico? The irony in that is just phenomenal. We really should remake that for the Bucks, to be honest, though. It'd be completely biting that guy's style, though I think a lot of people have done as well. I was prepping for the show and exhausted because I'm an idiot and I do too many things and not get enough sleep. And then the team that I adore and spend an inordinate amount of money and time and emotional currency on is absolutely sucking the fucking lifeblood out of me on a weekly basis. And then I started thinking about some of the other things. And she did. She wanted me to do a spin on last year spent in the chat room, and I just didn't get a chance to do it because I suck. Then I looked at some of the pictures from the tailgate. And I know in the chat room, and I know that we say this sort of just in passing amongst us here at What the Buck, but our tailgates are, in fact, undefeated. If you had a chance to read some of the comments from the Viking World Order, the people that came down here from Minnesota, we thought that the Ravens fans were complimentary of what we do at our tailgate, our little shindig. These guys were amazing. They were absolutely floored by what you guys do. And I say you guys, I know some of you folks who are at the show or listening to the podcast are not part of the tailgates, but you know, we sure as hell would like you to be part of the tailgates. Because especially in a season like this, and I think this speaks sort of directly to what Mike Polk is talking about in the video, sports are supposed to be a release. They're supposed to be an escape. They're supposed to be something that we can do to not think about paying your mortgage or not think about your child who's sick or the fact that you lost your dad or any sort of these things that are real life things. And sometimes they're not even like really catastrophic things like deaths or anything like that, but they're just, fuck, I really don't want to go on that trip to New Jersey because, well, New Jersey sucks balls. Sports are supposed to be our outlet. And if you just let yourself think about the game, if you just let yourself get tied into the wins and the losses and those sorts of things, then they can be the opposite of that. They can really, really bring you down. And I thought about how we had such an amazing time with these great fans from Minnesota, and I went and watched probably one of the worst football games I've ever seen. Now, Calico Jackson in the chat room, he will keep me honest about this because there were probably worse games. But the level of ineptitude on both sides of the ball, this game was absolutely, I would say, laughable, but it was worse than that. It was repugnant. It was terrible. And I think Jimmy Johnson, the chat room, has already mentioned, we're actually regressing in a lot of places. Now, we've got Steve White coming on here. He's going to be my voice of reason as well. Because I have not been able to stomach watching the fucking video of this game yet. I haven't gotten a chance to. I don't know that I ever will, to be honest, because I think it's going to be absolutely horrific. But I know Steve did. And he's going to tell me if there are good things to be seen there. I do believe a couple of things are true. I do believe that the system that's trying to be put in place in defense takes time to build. It is incredibly intricate, though people think it's simple. The trades that occurred, which we'll talk about, obviously, because they just happened. The Grim Reaper is here, man. If you're not part of this program, you will be shipped the fuck out of town. It is going to happen. With Jonathan Casillas going, I didn't think that was a big surprise. Jonathan's a solid athlete. He certainly looked good in training camp. Wasn't playing up to the level they wanted to. He obviously had some issues, behind scenes. Had the one little disciplinary thing. I don't know that that's a huge deal, but wasn't part of the picture. They broomed him. Mark Barron, high pick, never really materialized. He had the physical attributes to do great things and just didn't really come to fruition here. Now, that I don't want to isolate Mark Barron. Our safety play has just been garbage in general. So I think he's just the guy that we could move. And so they moved him before they just had to cut his ass and get someone else in there, which is a challenge. And it's more disappointing to think that that is, in fact, where we are. That's the point where we are in this season, that we're looking for how to stock the shelves for next season. That plays in very strongly to some of the things we're going to talk about with regards to who's going to play, why they're going to play, and why they shouldn't play. Whether it be quarterback or running back, tight end. Pewter Report, our friends over at Pewter Report, had an interesting article talking about free agent hits and misses. And Spen and I had a really interesting conversation about building through the draft. The way the CBA is structured now, it's a lot easier to build through the draft. You don't have to sell your soul because you have these huge rookie contracts. You can really kind of get these guys in here. And if you don't hit on your draft picks, which we noticed, Jimmy Johnson did some quick data. I don't know if he's had a chance to do any more of that, but most of the time, these aren't hits, not just here, elsewhere as well, but it's not that expensive versus going into free agent, spend a bunch of money on a Deshaun Goldson, and then watching the game change around him and nullify the thing that made him a pretty solid safety somewhere else and render his gameplay almost useless here and arguably useless almost anywhere, which is terrible. Now, Sizzle in the chat room says he doesn't think Tedford would make much of a difference. Losing your offensive coordinator is really tough. It really is, and I don't want to jump right into it because I want to do some housekeeping first, but I don't think we can downplay what it is like to lose that offensive coordinator. I think Coach Arroyo is doing the best he can, but and Jimmy Johnson mentioned it in the chat room before the game. He does the breakdowns and the scouting. When you look at the data about what we're facing from an offensive perspective, let me get up to the top of the sheet. You guys, we don't post this in any consumable fashion necessarily because we don't have time, but against in week 8, first down run pass was we ran the ball 11 times. We passed it 13. Starting field position average is 22 and change, almost the 23-yard line. Our second down average distance to go was 8.9 yards, which, of course, puts you in pass. So we're five runs and 13 passes in second down. Facing on third down, an average of 8.3 yards. Okay, so second down just completely sucked balls. First down sucked balls. Third down conversions in this game, does anyone know what our third down conversion rate was in this game? Anyone. Don't look it up, you cheaters. It was 8%. 1 out of 12. I don't even know how to describe this. Our average down and distance distance on third down was 8.3 yards. So we went from 10 yards. We went from 10 yards. It wasn't 4 out of 12. That was 8%. Hold on. You guys are calling me out here. Let me see if that's wrong. The official game book had us at 1 out of 12 on third down efficiency. It could be wrong. I didn't double check it. But you guys, I'm sure you guys will, which is great. I don't have any idea how the hell you can even function with that. And that leads directly into the set of whatever 7 three and outs that we had, which is the worst display of offensive ineptitude I think I may have ever witnessed in my life. Now, Minnesota wasn't that much better if you look at what they did on offense. But by comparison, I think watching Grits cook would have been exciting. Now, all of this, I know I looked it up, but I asked the question, Spent. That's what I did. See, I set that up. Of course, I looked it up. I didn't have it memorized. I had to set the stage. The penalties. I didn't even talk about the penalties yet. Jesus. I was already depressed before I talked about penalties. All right, let's do some housekeeping. We got Steve calling up at 9:30, so we'll do some chatting before that. Then we'll find out what's got Steve all fired up. People want to know what's up with Sims. He's apparently going to be the salvation. I don't see it. I don't have anything against Sims. I just don't think you can run behind this colander of an offensive line. I am astonished every week at how bad they are at run blocking. It is crazy that at the NFL level we could be this bad. Now, I know I talked to Spen as well, and she was watching the Cowboys game, the Cowboys and Redskins game, and she got depressed looking at that because of all the solid football that got played. I would like to use the Cowboys-Redskins game as another point of you cannot use what one team has done against another to just predict the rest of the season, guys. It's not that easy. I got into a discussion this weekend. Well, so-and-so beat so-and-so, and so subsequently they're going to not beat this other team, right? It's a logical fallacy to draw those conclusions. No one gave the Redskins a fucking snowball chance in hell against the Dallas Cowboys, and they walked out with a W. That said, the Dallas Cowboys offensive line creates holes that my fat ass could waddle through. Our team does not do that. We did beat the Steelers. And the Steelers beat the Colts. So we can beat the Colts, right? That's how it works? Oh, no, it doesn't work that way. Okay, let's do some housekeeping. I want to thank our sponsors. Obviously, the Wing House. We will be out at the Wing House for a number of events coming up here starting this weekend. We're working with Agent Claiborne and the family Claiborne, Mama Claiborne, and the whole crew for the Sack Hunger campaign. We'll be collecting food throughout this month. For that campaign, we'll be collecting it at Wing House and any of our events. We'll be there this weekend on Sunday starting at 11 o'clock for our Cleveland Browns watch party. For all of our watch parties, we'll be over at Tampa Wing House at 8001, I believe, West Hillsborough Avenue. The only place for Bucks fans to go and actually celebrate the game with other Bucks fans. I don't care about any of these other parties that are going on. You know the only place to be is at Wing House with the What the Buck crew. We'll be there. We'll be there throughout the entire game. Who knows? Maybe we can have the joy and jubilation we had against the Steelers. But even if not, they have beers. They have beers. Movember is this month, guys. Now, when I say this month, I mean November. We don't have another game or event inside of October, so we're really kind of done with October. We're going to tally up what happened at the last tailgate and the last event. We're going to racket all that number, all those monies together for the Spring of Tampa. I know Spence got a bunch of the donations. We're going to collect the rest of the donations and get those over to the Spring and the fine folks over there that do the great work they do at the Spring of Tampa. But if you have not signed up for our Movember team, Spence, if you could get that link and drop it in there, I would certainly appreciate it. I need you guys to sign up on our team. If you don't know what Movember is, I'm going to give you a little bit of a public service announcement. We did not set up a shaving event, Brian. And you know what? That's kind of – it's because it's Halloween, and I hate that it's Halloween. And I couldn't do it, right? My kids, I'm not missing Halloween with them. Now, could I scoot out afterwards? Yes, because I'm going to do that. Because guess what? I'm going to Wing House on Hillsborough for Dress to Impress because I have an idea what some of those costumes are going to be like. And bet your ass I'm going to be there to check them out. Bob says he can't do it because he's getting married on the 8th. You big sissy. I'm just kidding. Life happens, guys. You know, the way it works. Hold on. Feast just said Arroyo says Gilkey will continue to play. Feast, please bring that up again in a little while so I can throw up in my mouth appropriately. Gilkey is absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. So, Movember. Prostate cancer awareness, if you don't know what it is, we're going to be pumping a lot of information out about this throughout the month of November. It's 1 in 6 men will be diagnosed at some point. And it's one of those cancers that if we just take care of ourselves and get our screenings, there's no reason that we need to lose our friends, our fathers, our brothers, to this disease. We can beat this. And the Movember movement is about that. So we're going to be growing some mustaches. We'll pick out some styles. You ladies, please, please, please make us feel like you like mustaches as much as maybe you don't. Beards don't count. Goatees don't count. This is about a mustache. You can't puss out and use some other facial hair. No, you hipster fucks. You can't just rock a beard and pretend you're doing it. In fact, if you have a beard all the time, you're supposed to do the reverse mo, which means you're supposed to shave and be shaved the entire time. So that's going to be going on, and all of our proceeds are going to rack it out through the month of November. If Cheryl can find that link that was on the Facebook wall, we'll drop it in there so you can join the team. And if you join the team, they have all sorts of cool integration pieces to get that information out to your social network, and we can use social media extensively to spread the word. We actually not too long ago raised a ton of money for these guys. We do a good job for them every year, but it's a great cause to get behind, and we do it every year. So thanks so much. Winghouse, thank you very much. Steakhouse Elite, the guys are awesome. The people are loving the burgers and the dogs. We can't thank the folks out of Oregon enough. Elder Ford of Tampa, Terrell Hopkins, had the 2015 Mustang out at our tailgate this weekend. They give away the great free oil changes and the $200 gift certificate every week as well. We love those guys. If you need a car, if you need service for your car, get over there to Elder Ford of Tampa. Jesse James Spirits and Full Throttle Saloon Shine have been keeping you guys lubricated all year, have been making us capable of soaking our sorrows, and we thank them. Another person who's doing that is a company I work with called AFD Limited, American Football Development Limited, who has flag football camps going on right now in the UK. We're trying to bring American football skills, talent, and capability to Europe. It's already over there. It's just not getting played very well. So we got guys over there running the camps right now. Byron Chamberlain, my man Ronnie Gent, are running those camps, and they knew that we needed more alcohol this year, and so they chipped in, and they have closed the gap to allow us to have more alcohol at our tailgates. And then last but certainly not least, the crew of Blackbeard's Revenge. Our pirate ship has become legendary. I think someone mentioned in the chat room that the Minnesota people are going to try and get a longboat built after seeing the impact that can have on a tailgate. So those guys are awesome. We know what those guys do. The Making Strides campaign was hugely successful, and they always help us with our campaigns to a level that's amazing. Speaking of campaigns and people who deserve a ton of credit, Marianne Masolio from One Voice. You guys know Marianne. We talk about her all the time. I was picking up something the other night from Winghouse, probably food, given my girth. And I caught out of the corner of my eye the Lightning Hero of the Game. This is a campaign they do where they donate $50,000 to a particular community hero. And who do I see but Marianne Masolio? And that was awesome. So big shout out to One Voice and Marianne for being the Lightning Hero of the Game. Other note, we hit 5,000 followers on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. And what's fun about that is, well, 5,000 people apparently care enough to pay attention to what we babble about. The 5,000th person was Kevin Carter, who played for the Bucks. He also played for a couple of other teams earlier, but he played for the Bucks, and that's the important part. So we did hit 5,000, and it was Kevin Carter. I thought that was very cool. So thanks to you, any of you guys out there who follow us on Twitter and interact with us on Twitter. We really do appreciate that. Thank you, Spent, for dropping the Movember link into the chat room here. If you are a podcast listener, I will put that in the description of the podcast as well so you guys can get out there and sign up. You can either just donate to a member on the team. You can donate to the team instead of a member. All of those funds are going to get rolled into one group anyway. It doesn't matter. It's just dick measuring to see who raises the most money, which is fine. Or you can become a member, and then you can raise funds yourself, right, and try and get into that whole thing, which is a lot of fun. It can be very entertaining, and it's all for a great cause. Throwback shirts. You may have seen a lot of throwback shirts. I think we sold, I don't know, probably 180 of them. At the game. We could definitely see them at the game. That was a lot of fun. Hopefully, you guys, if you got a shirt, you're enjoying being able to rock that shirt. We do have some left. I've had a number of people ask about shipping, and you guys on the podcast, this one is for you as well. We're not shipping them anywhere, guys. We just don't have the time. No offense. We appreciate that you guys want to support us. We really, really do. What I would encourage you to do is find a listener, a participant, one of the other members of the staff, who you have a relationship with, or build a relationship. Make some connections down here in Tampa and get them to buy one at our events and have them ship it to you. But we're not going to do it through the website. So find someone in the chat room in here or through social media or through our Facebook wall or whatever, but we're not going to put this up on an online store. We just don't have time right now to do the shipping and all that stuff. I know that sounds shitty, but that's what it's down to. Bob, you're a good guy. You can find someone who can do this for you. Hell, if you ask Bent nicely enough, I'm sure she'll do it. But we will definitely make it work. Why don't we do a shaving event Sunday? Because the shaving event happens on Friday. It's part of the rules is it has to happen on the 31st. So, all right. I think I covered all the... Oh, Oh, we had a request from our man Gothic Football, Peter, to put a donate button on the website just for donations. It's on there, bottom right-hand side. It's on every page. If you want to just donate to the causes, feel free to do so. I think there's a comment field when you do the donate. It's a PayPal donate. It goes right to What the Buck Really Matters Foundation. You can earmark it for whatever. Or you can participate in any of the other drives we do. So that's all done. Well, it's not. They're not our rules, Spent. So I'm not. I mean, we can talk about it off air, but I'm not necessarily particularly interested in doing that. I would rather just do it the way you're supposed to do it, because I need the extra 2 days to grow, because I have light colored hair, and I am trying to do something majestic with this mustache this year. I really, really think we need more than a month for the mustaches, but we'll figure it out. All right, let's talk about football. Patches has some articles coming out. Carrie's going to get those edited. I'll talk to her tomorrow morning, find out when they're going to be up. He's got two in the hopper. The tailgate was awesome. It is undefeated. We will continue to do that. We have a football team in shambles. People wanted us to trade everybody, and then we traded people, and then they wanted to know why we traded those people. So it's very interesting to me what we moved and who we got. Erie Water, gross hair. Maybe they can ship some down. That would be great. Truesdale. Truesdale says he drove and he got it. That was right. He came down here and got his shirts. It's good loving. Let's talk about the trades. Barron, I wish he would have panned out. I really do. I think the guy's got a tremendous amount of upside, tremendous athletic ability. It didn't happen here, and I don't know why. What's going to happen at some point, this is one of the main reasons why I wanted Steve on here, I need to find out. I have a lot of faith in Coach Smith and a lot of faith in the staff he's put together. I am not going to get sucked into this TMZ-like short attention span that seems to have just become so goddamn pervasive everywhere, where people are like, well, fire this guy. We need a new coordinator. We need this. We need that. 7 games into a season. These things don't always happen quickly. In fact, they rarely happen quickly. Time shows us that. King Brutal wants to know if our team can be undefeated too. No, we've lost too many games to be undefeated. I wish they were. I wish that, you know, I said this the other day. I said I wish they were competitive, but they have been mildly competitive. We got our, you know, we got curb stomped by Atlanta and Baltimore. But other than that, we've been throwing some punches here and there. Even as inept as we have been, we've been in games. The problem, and I think Jimmy Johnson alluded to this earlier, is that the trajectory isn't right. We're not seeing a slow and gradual improvement. What we're seeing is pops, little dips, peaks and valleys. We're seeing guys seemingly forget week on week what the fuck they're supposed to do. We're seeing people not understand what the call is and make the defense look stupid. We're seeing guys not understand the basics of blocking and make our running game completely useless. Look at overtime in this game. So the Bucks go down there, take the lead. Minnesota plays for the tie, which I was completely floored by. I thought they were going to try and push it down there and get a score. Are you still doing player interviews? You know, I don't really anymore. I don't know why. I'm lazy, no time. Most of the time, the player interviews are, how should we say, not overly informative. The guys can't really speak freely. And to be honest, I would want to ask questions that they can't answer. And so rather than me ask just the same bullshit questions that other people ask in player interviews, or ask the questions I really want the answers to and push them and get them in an uncomfortable position, I've just kind of steered away from that. That's not to say we won't do them again. We could, but we haven't done them in quite some time, probably about 2.5 years. But it's a good question. What was I talking about? Shit, I don't remember. Ineptitude, blocking. Oh, no, in overtime. So they come down. Teddy Bridgewater made, I think, 3 solid throws in that game. And I like Bridgewater. I was a Teddy Bridgewater guy coming out of college. The touchdown pass was a very well-thrown ball. It was the right read. It was the right route. The route was run well. The ball was thrown when it had to be thrown. The coverage wasn't actually that bad. The throw he made to the east sideline over, I think it was Verner. It might have been Jonathan Banks. I think it was Verner, though. Verner had cut underneath. Had the ball not been thrown high intentionally to a tall receiver, that is six points going the other way. Great throw, great catch. But that's true, Smet. They were on lockdown as well. Thank you very much. I forgot all about that. The throw, I think it was on third down, when Bridgewater was being tackled by, I don't know, everyone on the defensive line got penetration. And he's falling back, and he lobs the ball left hash to Jennings running a drag, hits him in complete stride, converts, gets the first down, drive continues, they go down, they score the field goal, and the rest is sort of history. In overtime, we win the toss, which generally speaking means you got a really good shot at winning. We throw it. We finally go after ASJ, and I'll bring this up somewhere else. ASJ was generally being shadowed by an Oompa Loompa that was about 5'5". He should have had 30 targets that day. Does it suck that he fumbled the ball? Yes. It does. It's a mistake. It sucks. The play was a good play call. The pass was good. His effort was good. It sucks to do all those things right and then have a very wrong outcome. But that's exactly what we saw. You have the excitement of overtime, and then bam, you get it ripped right away from you. Now, I know Steve's going to call in at about 9:30, so I don't want to get into too many deep things. We'll talk a little bit more about the trades because I saw that Rick Hughes wanted to discuss that a little bit. And then when Steve calls in, I got a bunch of questions I want to ask him. If you have questions for Steve White, get them into the chat room. I'll do my best to cover them as well. First interception by Glennon. It looked like Evans had beat both the songs. So I think yes. Yes, I agree. But here's the thing, guys. And I had a guy in my office today who had been a pro-Glennon guy. And this isn't about pro-Glennon. I've tried to say this on like every show. This isn't about being pro-Glennon or anti-Glennon. You have to see what he has, right? If McCown was the answer and didn't get injured, right, McCown would never have been pulled out had he not been injured, in my opinion. Lovie Smith would have stuck with him. Damn the fans, he would have stuck with him because he felt he gave us the best chance to win. When he went down, we had to see what we had with Glennon. At this point, this season is a loss. Yes, I know mathematically it's not yet, but fuck it, it is a loss, more or less. I don't see any reason to go back to McCown unless you are already assuming you've seen enough of Glennon. And to be honest, yeah, you got to see him some last year, and you've gotten to see him, what, 5 games this year. But if you've got to make a decision in the offseason about whether or not you're going to go for a franchise quarterback, and I hate using that fucking term, because everybody wants a franchise quarterback. Everyone acts like, oh, yeah, well, you have to be a high draft pick and you get a franchise quarterback. That's where you do. You show up early. It's like Black Friday, and then you buy the awesome dope TV for $15. It's a great deal. But I think that at this point, you've got to ride him till it's over. I just don't see any point. And then make a call in the offseason. Now, this is going to be something where Lovey's going to test fans' mettle, man. I'll tell you what. This is a guy who is not going to bend to the will of the community. And I happen to like that, to be honest. I mean, I know a lot of fans feel very empowered, and they think that the staff should listen to them because they spend their hard-earned money, and they go to the games. And I think that's all noble and wonderful and all of those things. And guess what? As much as I know about football, these guys shouldn't be listening to me. They know more than I do. I can point shit out, and maybe there's some things that they don't see because they're too far in. But, guys, the chance of them, this staff changing, I think is very, very slim. Fish is anti-Gilkey, which is absolutely clear. Skip is anti-Glennon. In the chat room. Skip is also anti-Michael Johnson, who had one of his better games of the year this week, even though he's getting chip blocked just aggressively. If you guys ever remember me going these rants about chip blocks 2 years ago, go watch this damn game. The Vikings were beating the fuck out of his ribs. Very smart. There's Steve right there. Let's get him, Steve. Let's get Steve in here. Hello, Mr. White. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. Let me get your audio levels fixed up. For some reason, Skype sucks ass. We'll get that fixed. All right. So you said you're doing okay, Steve?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
All right. Well, welcome to the broadcast. It's always good to have you back. We are obviously in a state of mild disarray because the Bucks look like shit, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better. First impressions right now, what's happening? What's the state of the union in Tampa?
Well, I would say the offense and defense are kind of going in different directions. A couple weeks ago, I thought the offense was maybe taking off a little bit. You know, Glennon was in, and we won one game and did pretty good against the Saints as well. Now we can't seem to get out of our own way. Obviously, the Ravens just, you know, they have Glennon back there looking like he was a deer in the headlights. The Vikings didn't necessarily have put that much heat on them, but it just the beginning of the game, man. It looks like, I don't know, we can't do anything. We can't run the ball. Offensive line was just terrible. Couldn't create any creases. I mean, there was nowhere to run. And, you know, I've criticized Doug Martin before it was even, you know, the thing to do. But if you don't have any holes anywhere, there's nowhere to run. You know, I don't care who you got back there. You can have, hell, Earl Campbell. He ain't going to have nowhere to run either. So offense just looked horrible. Our defense actually played better on Sunday. Didn't play great by any stretch of the imagination, but they did improve. They were most of the time lined up where they were supposed to be. Most of the time playing the kind of zone defenses they were supposed to play. Still had a few situations where Mason Foster, for instance, doesn't continue to carry the guy up the middle of the field, but a lot less than usual. So the defense did get better, but, you know, they couldn't in crunch time, they couldn't stop them from getting a field goal. In fairness, you know, the team has almost 2 minutes to get the ball down in field goal range in a two-minute situation. That is one of those high-percentage situations. Like, generally, that's going to end with them kicking a field goal like they wanted to. Just because you got so much time and, you know, it's hard to stop a team in a two-minute situation like that from getting maybe, you know, 50, 60 yards and getting a field goal position. But we had to find a way to do it. If we wanted to win that game, we needed somebody to come up with a big sack right then or an interception or something and close the game out for us. And that's the one thing that we still lacking on defense, and I guess offense too. We don't know how to close the game out yet. So, you know, I was discouraged after the game, of course. I felt like this was one of the more winnable games that's left on the schedule. But it didn't happen. So what can you do? All you can do is line back up the next week and try to do it again.
Now, Steve, how do you explain to fans who may not know how to evaluate tape the same way you do, how the defense can look like it got better when everything looked so bad? This was one of the least entertaining games I think I've ever actually witnessed, right? It really did look bad sort of all around. You talk about assignments being lined up correctly. That's obviously a good thing. How can you describe that to fans and maybe give them a way to see those sorts of things? You're not going to be able to describe all coverages and such, but what made them look better this week versus the week before, for instance?
Well, for one, obviously we forced quite a few punts. We did give up, you know, some big plays, but generally the defense found a way to force a punt for most of the game. They give up the one touchdown on basically, I think it's another double move on Verner.
Yep.
Which he evidently, that's his kryptonite evidently, and he just can't cover it. And so we give up that touchdown and another field goal. But, you know, 13 points, first of all, holding the team to 13 points, I would say is an obvious upgrade from what we just came off of with the Ravens. But really, you look back the whole season, holding the team 13 points, that's pretty much our high watermark right now. So that's an obvious sign of progress that we held them to just 13 points. But the fact that we didn't have quite as many big plays during the game. But at the end of the day, improvement, that's great and everything, but if you don't get a win, who really gives a shit?
Right, right. It's lipstick on a pig at this point, but it's very tough, I think, for the fan base. You're right. I mean, forced is probably a bit of a stretch. Eight punts happened by the Minnesota Vikings. It's probably a combination of what we did and their own ineptitude because they're not a very good team either. We only punted the ball.
See, that's one thing I say. I can't really say that. Like, they're a pretty good defense. They have the leading sack in the league on their defensive line. He happened to give us hell, too. Their right defensive end, Everson Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And their defense is young, but they're pretty good on defense. They haven't had many wins, but then they transitioned to Teddy Bridgewater. He wins a game, but he gets hurt against Atlanta. You know, so really it's kind of one of those things where Teddy Bridgewater is a rookie, so he's going to make some rookie mistakes, but he's looked pretty good in every game. They have two really good running backs that nobody knew about because they had Adrian Peterson before, and they have some talent at the wide receiver position. We know about Cordarrelle Patterson and the one guy who
Jennings.
Used to play for the Packers,
Jennings.
Jennings, that caught the touchdown. So they have some talent. You know, they have some talent. They haven't really been able to put it all together much of this season, but it's not like they're the Jaguars. Like, I watch the Jaguars every week. Trust me, they're miles away from the Jaguars. Hell, they might be a better team than Cleveland, just to be honest with you, because Cleveland.
So you're saying there's a chance this week then? Is that what you're telling me, Steve? Are you trying to give me a silver lining?
I'm really not, though. I'm really not, like.
Shit.
I said this on air before the game. I cannot, in good conscience, pick us to win another game the rest of the season until I see some major changes. I just can't do it. Even when I think it's going to be a close game, I do think it'll be a close game this weekend. But I just don't have anything to latch on to and say we'll find a way to pull it out and win a close game right now. If we do that for a few weeks in a row and I see some consistent improvement on both sides of the ball, maybe I'll come back around. But for right now, I just can't pick this team to win.
Now, you mentioned something that we've talked about as well, which is in these critical moments in the game, right, the final drive that they go down and kick the field goal to force it to overtime. There are these sort of inflection points in games where you need your big-name guys or someone. It doesn't have to be your big-name guy, for God's sakes. It doesn't have to be Gerald McCoy or Levante David, but someone has to step up and make that play. Now, you were on teams like this. What does the team have to do to turn that corner and get that guy to step up? And we had another dropped interception opportunity. Is there a silver bullet here, or is there a combination of things that have to fall into place? Are we looking at something that's off by 10 degrees, or are we off by 90 degrees, and it's just going to be a long fucking end of the season?
Well, it's a little bit of both, actually. One thing is we're going to have to get some better players. We're going to have to get some playmakers, guys that don't just, you know, aren't just good for, you know, being where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there, but can also jump around, get an interception, actually make a play on the ball on a quick slant, things of that nature. In our secondary, we don't really have a lot of guys like that. I'm not sure we have one. I thought Vernon would be that guy, but even he sometimes has looked suspect this season. So we're going to have to get some better Jimmys and Joes. But X's and O's wise, I think we can get better as well. I do believe, and see, this is one of the parts of it is like, you look and say, well, the Vikings probably aren't that good anyway, and they end up playing the football quite a bit. But some of it was we were finally playing pass defense the way it's actually drawn up on the chalkboard. So now there's not a whole bunch of people running wide open like it was before. And so now Bridgewater can't just hit us down the middle. He has to dump the ball off, we rally up, and tackle the guy short of the first down. That's how our defense is supposed to work in the first place. So it's actually working a little bit better. But, man, this season, I don't know if I've ever been as frustrated as I've been this season just because on both sides of the ball, you can see the potential. You can see that, you know, they're in the right direction, but for some reason you can't get everybody on the same page. So.
Now, Gerald McCoy came out atypically. Now, Gerald doesn't have a problem with the press. He actually has a very well-managed press career, I think. But he made a comment about guys, you know, sitting on blocks and sort of called out his teammates a little bit. Is that something you've seen in film as well? I know you're usually very critical of guys who are not getting off blocks and not putting out the effort. It's tough to guess whether it's an effort question or not. That's not really the easiest thing to deduce. But you heard what Gerald said. What are your thoughts about the way the defense is reacting in that situation?
Well, I don't really necessarily take his comments that way. Like, the way I heard it was, you know, he was asked about the defense being soft. And I'm sure there's some people out there that just called him soft because they've given up a lot of points and
sure.
a lot of yards. And, you know, you just assume they must be soft. And instead of him trying to, you know, I guess pick apart the argument or you know, explain in some kind of detail why they aren't soft, he just said, well, okay, if they're saying we're soft, sure, we're soft. You know, the guys sometimes not getting off blocks, making plays, and I guess if you want to call this soft, then yeah, we're soft. And he kind of made it like, you know, whatever y'all say about us right now is probably true because we got to own that because we suck right now and we got to play better. And it's really the smart play on his part, just to be honest with you, because he couldn't have possibly won that situation
right.
if he tried to dispute the notion that this defense is soft with us being in the, you know, the bottom of the damn basement in every category, it seems. So he just kind of owned it and was like, you know, if y'all want to call us soft, okay, we're soft too. Guys need to get off blocks and make more plays. That's not really even in the definition of soft anyway. But he made it be the definition of soft so he could say, well, yeah, we're soft because we're not making enough plays. Guys aren't getting off blocks. But at the end of the day, our pass rush, you know, obviously my thing is the defensive line.
Right.
But I know pretty much a little about everything that goes on with the team. So I try to make sure that I don't have everything focused about the defensive line because I'm sure everybody would kind of at some point get tired of it. They want to hear about everybody else too.
Sure.
But specifically the defensive line, man, there's so many things that I wish they were doing differently that I think would help us. We're stunning now. We're running basically one stunt. It's a power stunt. And it's a decent stunt. But you can't run it
all the time. Right.
Like, you just can't. You know, the team's sitting there, the opposing team's sitting there waiting on us to do it. You lose all of the element of surprise, and now guys can't possibly win. We just send them, it's like hitting your head against the wall to continue to call that over and over again. We need some more line stunts as far as, you know, some diversity in that. And on the flip side of it, when it gets to third and long, we need to stop all these damn pass rush games. Jim McCoy is far and away our best pass rusher. But nobody to this day has told him, hey, Gerald, we need for you to make outside rushes about 85% of the time. Because you can win every single time you make an outside rush. And when you win, even if you don't get the sack, you'll help the rest of the defensive line.
Right.
Because now you're going to move the quarterback off the spot. Now you chase the quarterback over there to Michael Johnson, or he steps up right into the arms of Clint McDonald, or maybe he moves to his left, and he's right in Will Golston's arms. But Gerald McCoy is in love with his inside move. And that's great because he's gotten sacks on it and he's pretty good at it. But he only wins about one out of maybe every five of those rushes. And the difference is when he gets stuck on the inside move, that usually means now he's being double-teamed by the center and guard and he can't help anybody. Like, there's nothing he can do to help anybody else's rush. He's stuck on the line of scrimmage. And now everybody else has to win. Now, you can't, you know, take your foot off of everybody else's throat because, look, you're paid to be an NFL player. Michael Johnson's paid handsomely to be a pass rusher for us. You should be able to generate your own pass rush, true enough. But we are not maximizing our potential by really getting Gerald McCoy to be the three technique we need him to be, kind of like a la Sam. And I was saying this to Booger the other day. Really, it's because there ain't too many people that's coached a guy like Sapp, you know, that had their dominant three technique and built around him. And so many defensive line coaches have to try to figure out how to generate a pass rush with defensive tackles that can't really rush that well, that they make it more so geared around the defensive ends. You know, everything's right around the defensive ends. Well, if you're not used to doing it, man, then you're going to end up probably doing it wrong. And right now, and I have a lot of respect for Joe Cullen and Mike Fair, but right now, in my humble opinion, they're coaching us wrong.
Now, and that's the question. Lose. That's the question. Steve. You have a lot of respect for these guys, and you don't drop things like that often, right? That's one of those things where when former players and guys who know the game will put themselves on the line and say, hey, I respect this guy. This guy knows the game. And you were very excited and very excited about what you thought the staff would bring to this talented set of players, and it hasn't come to fruition. What do you attribute that to?
I can't put my finger on it. And some of it is preference. Like I said, this is my personal opinion about how I would do it. I can give you other examples. I don't think we tilt our ends in enough so that they have a straight line to the quarterback.
Right.
And so that they can knock back those offensive tackles when they come off to try to hit us and knock us off the ball. And I say this all the time. It's something I've taught for years when I was teaching a defensive lineman or coaching a defensive line. Look, if your hips are not turned towards the person that's trying to block you, they're going to have the advantage because they'll be able to push you to the side because your hip, you need force to be able to fight force.
Right.
If your hips aren't turned right into them, you can't fight their force back the way they're coming right at you. Their hips are definitely going to be pointed right at you. Well, if you don't tilt in before the snap, your hips are almost always going to be parallel to the line of scrimmage instead of angled in towards the guy who's blocking. And so there's just a little thing right there that I'm like, that little thing will help us a lot. I think that little thing will help Michael Johnson tremendously because one of his biggest problems right now is he's trying to make speed rushes with his hips parallel to the line of scrimmage, and that's never going to work. He's going to have to turn in his hips. Actually, we have one guy doing it, number 56, so don't know his name. He's going to have to turn his hips in towards the quarterback if he wants to make a speed rush be successful. He's just not going to be able to do it anywhere else because those offensive tackles are just going to punch you, and you're going to be off balance because your hips aren't pointed where they should be. And I say the thing about 56, right? Here's the thing about that. Obviously, you know, I do know his name is
Jacques Smith.
Right now.
Jacques
but
Smith.
But he came later on. You know, he came after the season started, I think.
Yep.
And so it's kind of funny to me that a guy who ain't been around here all season is the one guy that's rushing the way you should be rushing the defensive end. Maybe that says something.
Well, what's interesting is the only other guy that I remember doing that was Scott Solomon when he was here, number 60, and he had one move. He had the edge rush, right? And he'd take that tack, and he'd get around edge usually once in a game, and then the tackle would realize that was his one move, and then he'd beat the shit out of him the rest of the game. But the techniques, the things that you have complained about here, and I don't mean that in a bad way. You're being critical in a solid way. They're not new. They're similar to the regime before. It's like they've got good groceries here, and they've got a good cook, but for some reason the cook is drunk or something, and he can't get this done. And it's vexing, right? Because you see what's happening now. They get rid of Barron, talented guy, but wasn't working out here. Casillas, athletically talented guy, wasn't working out here. Looks like they're going to accumulate more guys. Where does this end? Where does this turnstile stop spinning? Is it the people? Is it the coaching staff? I don't know, so I got to ask people that are smarter than me, and that's you.
Well, I can't say because I'm not in the meetings. I can't say whether it's the coaching staff or not. And once again, some of this is a preference thing. I do believe that they're teaching these guys to be square in their stance before the snap. I just don't agree with it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So these guys might be being taught. They might be doing exactly what they're being taught. I just don't agree with it. And so I think time will tell. I think time will tell because guess what? Michael Johnson can still pass rush. It doesn't seem like it because you don't see it. But I watch every play of all 22 every week. So every time, you know, I get frustrated with them trying to do the speed rush, the dense speed rush that never works over and over and over again. But then all of a sudden, he'll do a long arm, and it'll work. Or he'll do a bull rush, and it'll work. You know why? Because he's done bull rushes for so long in his career, he knows he has to turn his hips in to do a bull rush or to do a long arm. And so he just naturally does it on those moves. And the results are pretty good. Now, the thing I can't understand for the life of me is why he doesn't do it every play.
Right.
So, yeah, some of it does have to fall on coaching, because I'm just saying, if I'm on the sideline and I'm seeing this week after week, and I'm seeing on film week after week, that, hey, here are your best moves.
These use them.
Here haven't worked in the first 8 weeks. I would be telling them, hey, use these moves all the time.
Yeah.
Somebody should have done that by now. I'm saying that straight out, flat out. Somebody should have went to Michael Johnson by now and, hell, said straight up, look, if you do another dip move, I'm pulling you out the rest of the game. You need to do long arms and bull rushes until you get a feel for the game again, and then you start doing everything else. But I don't want any inside quick swims, which he was doing early on in the season. I don't want any of this bullshit except for long arms and bull rush. You do that, and I won't complain. Somebody should have done that by now. And guess what? If they had, he would have more sacks by now and more pressures. But because he's just wasting rushes out there trying to do a dip move with his fucking hips parallel to the line of scrimmage, and it's never going to work. Never. And he's a much better pass rusher than that. So we are wasting some of our assets, plain and simple.
Well, I tell you, this is not a rookie coaching staff, right? These guys have got plenty of experience, and it's absolutely fucking pissing everybody off, including guys like you, that this is happening. And hopefully, I don't know whether you got Michael's number. You can call a guy up and go tell him these things. I mean, I don't know what you can do.
Listen, I'm about ready to go to one book and just sit outside until they come out after practice and have my own little mini defensive line meeting. And once again, it's not to step on Coach Cullen's toes or Mike Ferris' toes, but I played in the defense for 6 years, okay? And I know how hard it was to assimilate to it at first. I also know the tricks of the trades that we picked up over the way, and I also know that when we played it with a dominant three technique, it's a little bit different from the way they've had to coach this thing before. So I know some tricks of the trade that will help them tremendously. Those two things I mentioned today, if they did that this week, everybody on the defensive line production would go up. If Gerald McCoy would rush 85% of the time outside instead of inside rushes, everybody's productivity would go up. If the ends could tilt in before the snap, everybody's production would go up. Those little things like that, which you pick up over time and playing around with it, like, okay, maybe we start off with squared up, but then we start noticing, hey, if you tilt in a little bit, things get better for you. Those kind of things. You know, hell, they still can't run a pass rush game to save their life. And you know there's nothing on this earth that's frustrating me more than watching them run these bullshit-ass text moves still in 2014, and we still can't get any rush off our text game, even though we have a dominant guy like Gerald McCoy there to run it inside. Nobody knows the fuck they're doing. And so, yeah, it's very frustrating for me. I don't want to, you know, make it seem like I'm bashing everybody or bashing all the coaches, because I'm not. I'm just saying there's some shit that could be a lot better, and it's not happening at the rate I like it to see.
Well, you know, you hope that the coaching staff is open to these things, and you know that they have access to film, more film than we have. I mean, All 22 is great, but they've got all this stuff. They've got to be spending this time. These guys are getting paid, and they realize that the NFL is not for long, not for players only, but for coaches too. And if they continue to put up tape where it looks like guys are not being educated properly, Mason Foster is an athletic guy. You mentioned the comment earlier where, you know, there are times where he doesn't follow a guy up the middle of the field the way he's supposed to. You know that because at that point you know what his responsibility is, because you now know what the defense is because you've seen the way the players have moved. What that means is either he is fucking up, which means that either he is just, you know, once in a while fucking up, or he is incompetent, or he's not being coached properly, right?
Well, like I said, we've had three different guys play middle linebacker with Tampa 2 defenses, and all three of them have fucked up on trying to carry the number 3 up the seam. So at some point, you got to say it's not specific to any one guy. If everybody in the group is fucking up, then guess what?
Chances are it's the coach.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
You know, whether I want it to be or not, that's just how it goes.
All right, listen, Steve, I don't want to keep you too long. I've already kept you almost a half hour. It's good having you back on the show. I want to let you to drop a little bit of knowledge about anything else you want to tell people about. The trades were going on, obviously. Offensive side of the ball, we didn't talk much about. People are talking about Sims like he's the salvation. Well, I think you run into a bunch of people.
About Sims, Mike, fast, so y'all can understand.
Yeah,
I wouldn't give a good goddamn if Superman was coming off of injured reserve schedule to come back. We don't have any holes being created up front by our offensive line. Charles Sims is not going to all of a sudden come and have some kind of flux capacitor and be able to zap his ass from behind our offensive line to 10 yards down the field. That ain't the way this works. So if they weren't creating lanes before now, I'm not sure how they're going to magically all of a sudden turn into the 93 Cowboys offensive line and start opening all these holes. Charles Sims is a bigger back, okay, so maybe he can take a little bit more of a pounding inside. But I promise you, if you expect and all of a sudden, oh, we got Charles Sims back, everything's fixed, you're going to have a very rude awakening on Sunday. Our fucking offensive line sucks, man. And look, it ain't getting no better. In a lot of ways, it's getting worse. Logan Mankins, shit, I might have been wrong about him. We might have gotten fleeced by the Patriots, after all. Obviously, our free agents are just stealing right now. Dietrich Smith should be ashamed of himself. That's not even speaking Collins. So, if you think Charles Sims coming off IR is going to magically fix all that shit, you got another thing coming, okay? I think he's a fantastic young player. I really did like the pick when we drafted him, but he's no magician. He ain't going to change that much. We need changes on the offensive line. Garrett Gilkey, Elgin is not the answer. Matter of fact, he is the answer. No, as in never put his ass in another game after he screwed up that drive, in the crucial drive in the Saints game. Then he comes in and screws up every single play that he's in on Sunday. I mean, that's hard to do.
You got to work at that.
To fuck up every single play that you're in there, including, I think they had an extra play because of one of his penalties. That is fucking amazing shit right there. So, yeah, get him the fuck out of there. You can't touch the field again, son. I mean, seriously, you fall down on fucking ISO on the first play. That's the one play people didn't even know he fucked up on because he didn't get a penalty. Then you get another penalty for holding because we're actually trying to run a screen, I think, and your dumb ass is holding on the screen. What kind of fucking moron are you? And then you turn around and we run a fucking draw just to get some field position, and you hold on that play too. What the fuck?
Dude, he's trying to demonstrate consistency, Steve. Don't you understand?
Yeah, he can consistently sit his ass down somewhere. Because, yeah, as bad as Patrick Omame is, at least he ain't throwing up all over himself like that.
Shit,
so,
by comparison, Omame looks like a Pro Bowler.
I mean, by comparison, he looks like a fucking Hall of Famer.
But yeah.
So, yeah. But if it was up to me, shit, I'd have traded everything that went nailed down. If it comes to our offensive line, if it was somebody stupid enough to want anybody on our offensive line, I'd have gave their ass away because we're fucking terrible. And it reminds me of my alma mater, Tennessee. You know, people are kind of expecting us to be a little bit better this year, and we are, but our offensive line is so terrible that it's holding the rest of the team back, period, point blank. And that's where we're at right now in Tampa Bay. We can talk about a whole bunch of shit, and I will. But let me explain something to you. Our fucking offensive line is terrible. Until they stop being terrible, I don't give a damn how much better the defense gets. I don't give a damn if Glenn all of a sudden, you know, the light bulb comes on again for him. I don't give a shit. He can't throw when he's on his back. Our running backs can't get yardage when they're getting knocked on their ass in the backfield. Until our offensive line is fixed, we're screwed for the rest of the year. So, hey, how's that for some happy news on the win?
Dude, you are definitely not going to be hired as Santa at the local mall with that kind of attitude. I'll tell you that right now.
Bah humbug.
Bah humbug, motherfucker. All right. What else you got going on? You've got all these articles going on constantly. You're tearing up tape. You're getting your voice out there, not just in this market but other markets. What's going on with Steve White? How can people check you out in more spots?
Well, you know, Everything is pretty much on Twitter, SGW94. You don't even have to follow me, which I understand is, you know, some people just abuse their privilege anyway. Just check my page. You can check my page. Everything's in my favorites list. Whenever I'm going to be on with somebody, I usually tweet that out as well. And, of course, I have a pregame show every week. Explain to you just how bad we're going to get our ass kicked. So, you know, check me out whenever you get a chance because I'm trying to do some pretty good stuff.
Now, listen, this week again, I mean, we talk about it from time to time. I know you got busy life, too, but we're going to be down at Wing House, not that far from where you're going to be doing your show, I imagine. So come on down if you want to after you do your pregame. And say hi to the fans if you get a chance. This week against the Browns, you see us losing. Yes?
Yeah, listen.
Dude, I'm not kidding. We're losing.
I'm not picking us to win again. They're going to have to show me something positive consistently before I even consider picking them again. I'm dead ass serious.
All right. Well, there you have it. You guys heard it from Steve White, a known Bucs apologist in a positive way, man, in the same way I am. And he is fed up with this. The offensive line is where the crosshairs are at. You know, thanks, Steve, for joining us as always. Guys, listen to the pregame show on 98.7 The Fan. And if you get a chance, Steve, come on down. We'll have a glass of water. And we have a pretty good group down there. You might have a good time.
I'm going to try to make it.
All right, man. Take care, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, bye-bye. Steve White, ladies and gentlemen, as always, entertaining, as always, just uncensored like a motherfucker. So I got to tell Steve, I got to give him the 411 on the fact that you guys made anytime he cusses a drink word, he will think that is absolutely hilarious. And I would love if we could get some data done on how many times that was, because this is a guy who, he's a Cowboys fan, right? As a kid growing up, he's a Cowboys fan, but he played for the Bucs. He is a Buccaneer. And in one of his articles, he talked about this. He's not a Bucs fan. He is a Buccaneer. And so when you hear him talk about this team, he talks about the way we do. There's ownership. Now, it's in some ways, it's, you know, an order of magnitude more serious because he actually wore those colors. He played for that team. But there are a couple of things that are really important there. One, the running back situation is not going to fix itself. The offensive line has got to be fixed. What the fuck is the offensive line doing to fix itself? What is the coaching staff doing to fix it? Is it people? I don't think so. I think they actually can do all the pieces and parts. They seem to be able to. But they got to start putting this stuff together. Now, Coach Arroyo said that we may go to max protect if we can't get the protection we need. Well, shit, you're going to have to find someone who can block. You got to. I don't know how Joe Buck will quote that, Sven. That's funny. Anyway, let's talk briefly about the Browns game. I'm not going too long tonight because I got to get some sleep because I'm seeing things. You guys are all drunk because you were drinking every time Steve cursed. I'm looking for, and this sounds so fucking weak too. I hate saying this because I think sometimes people think that I'm happy with mediocrity or whatever. I'm not. Do I hold the team that I love to a high bar? Yes, I want them to win. I remember the days when we were always going to win 10 games, and we were always going to compete for playoffs, and we were always going to have a shot at the Super Bowl. There weren't a lot of them, but I remember them. They were awesome. I loved every fucking season of it, right? I loved every day going to the game thinking we had a real legitimate chance. I loved the days of going to the game thinking we should curb stomp these guys, right? By saying there's no way. We look at the matchups. Now, physically, we've got some of those things, and that's one of the things I think is so frustrating, and I said I'd talk about this a little bit more, so I want to make sure I loop back and wagon wheel this, as Kerry would say. ASJ should have caught 27 passes against the Minnesota Vikings for 7,000 yards. It should have been a game that ESPN did a 30-on-30 on the day after the game. It should have been epic proportions. Lions and lambs, lying together, cats and dogs. How the fuck do you have a 6'7 tight end who's that athletic going against a 4'3 defensive player regularly? It wasn't every play. They certainly did change the defense from time to time, but it was a very common occurrence if you watch that tape. How do you not just say, you know what, fuck it. Wherever Oompa Loompa is, we are going after his ass. Because they sure as hell did that against Jonathan Banks. Teddy Bridgewater's like, where's 2-7? 2-7. Oh, there's 2-7. Oh, yeah, motherfucker, I'm coming to you. Yeah, I know ASJ fumbled the ball. That sucked. He also caught the touchdown pass. I don't know how he caught. I don't know how he bucket caught that with two guys there, but that's fine. Oh, Calico. Calico, you're so mean. I remember when Gruden's teams weren't winning by enough. I know. Oh, that's brutal. Absolutely brutal. All right. Cleveland this week, what do I want to see? I want to see us run for 120 yards. I'd like to see us average 3.7 or better on the ground. I would like our defense to win the turnover battle. Those are my keys. I'm not talking about winning. I'd like to. I'd love to get up there and beat Cleveland. It'd be great. We got some good friends in Cleveland. I'd love to rub it in their face if we could beat them as bad as we are right now. What opportunity to present itself, Fish? Fish, the phone line's open, man. If you don't know who the hell Fish is, Fish does the Bucks Brief podcast, one of the only podcasts I actually pimp because I think he does a hell of a good job. Fish, if you got something to talk about, you're welcome to call in. You know the number, 813-964-7364. I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about, so feel free if you'd like to call in. I think you wrote another call, though. Score in the first quarter would be nice. Score when you have the fucking opportunity to. Here's the thing is, we got a field goal kicker who kicked a field goal that would have been good from about 90 yards out. When we got the kick, when we got the ball in overtime, I jokingly said, well, when the coin toss happened, the guy in front of me said, you know, we should probably defer. Because they're going to try and drive, and we may be able to stop them, and we'll have a better field position and maybe have a chance to kick a field goal. It would also be funny to see if Lovie actually deferred the overtime, which I don't know has ever happened before intentionally. But once we did get the ball, I'm like, listen, just get like 15 yards and then give Murray a chance to kick it because that kid's got a huge leg. Let him just do it. By the way, speaking of legs, we finally got to see Kanan actually punt the ball the way he can punt the ball. And what happened? Our fucking coverage team was so bad, the guy took it back 28 yards. Fortunately, there was a holding penalty. And you could tell the special teams coach was like, God damn it. Just bloop him down there again, Kanan. I'm sorry. I don't know. For some reason, coverage is a fucking mystery. Special teams are evading us. What I don't know is how we can start to get those little wins. Little wins lead to big wins. You got to get building blocks, right? Like you guys know this. I think McCown is a better thrower of the football. It doesn't matter. Glennon, we got to see what he's got. McCown, best case, is going to be there next year, right? We're not winning this year. It doesn't matter. So let Glennon ride this out. See what he can do. Nothing against Mike. Did Mike make some good throws? Yes. Did he make some bad throws? Yes. That's going to happen. That's what playing time is about, guys. You're not going to find me have an issue with that at all. Now, someone said earlier, I think it was Calico Jack in the chat room, last year's V-Jack would have went and got balls. This is something these guys have got to do. They've got to stay alive as well. Glennon is not necessarily nimble or agile. But if he extends the play by scrambling, by God, don't give up on your routes. You've got to stay active. When you look at good receivers across the league, when the play breaks down, they go to find an empty space in the field that the quarterback can get the ball to. You don't stay on your route, right? When the play breaks down, you've got to give the quarterback a chance. And that's what we're not doing. Where the fuck has Lewis Murphy been? Is he on a milk carton somewhere? Because he's too talented not to get targeted. I had the stats over here, but I threw all my papers away when I was pissed off. What was it? Where the hell was Vince Jackson? I mean, 5 targets, 1 reception. It's terrible. Lewis Murphy, 2 for 2. Oh, God. I don't understand it. And Sander, my man Sander from Buck Nation, the screen pass on 3rd and 7 or whatever. We have not proven in 3 years that we can actually successfully articulate or execute, rather, a screen pass, swing pass, or any variant thereof. We just haven't done it. Despite what seems to be a desire to get more athletic and mobile offensive linemen, they can't get out of their own way to get out into the play. No one is fooled by our tactics, whereas our defense is fooled constantly by the incredible trickeration that a screenplay represents. So, yeah, I hated that call.
Not without a holding call. Nice. And I also said this to someone else, and this is going to be poorly received, but Deshaun Goldson, stop talking. We gave the offense the ball a lot of times. I don't know what's happening on that side of the ball. Really? I don't know what's happening when you're not where the fuck you're supposed to be in coverage. I don't know what's supposed to happen when guys are catching the ball to the seam with no fear whatsoever of getting hit, because you apparently are so scared of getting fined that you don't hit people at all anymore. You just catch them and give them a hug to the ground. Less talking, more play. Is this the one and only Fish?
Dude, let me tell you what I've been doing listening to your show tonight.
Yes. Masturbating?
Yes, I do. Well, yeah, I've got you up on Ustream, Derek, and that's exactly what I've been doing.
No one's ever accused me of being professional, so go ahead.
What in the hell? I mean, coming on to a show after Steve White just completely, annihilates it, is not probably a smart move on my part.
Step up, son. Ice up, son.
Here's what I was saying, Derek, and thank you for putting the number in so I can call in.
Sure.
The damn thing that's pissed me off since week two was when Marcus Arroyo said in his press conference the fact that our offenses, the opportunities did not present itself when they would not throw the ball to Mike Evans when he had a Janoris Jenkins at 5'10", and he's saying the opportunity doesn't present itself. Well, it's single fucking coverage, and you've got a 6'5 wide receiver that you drafted at number 7 overall. You throw him the damn ball. Well, they did it against the Steelers, and look what happened. It fucking worked.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
This week, and I was on with these guys from the Minnesota Vikings, and they basically trashed their linebacking core and said, these guys can't fucking cover anyone. So you guys should utilize Safarian Jenkins all day long, because the matchup is just absolutely ridiculous in your favor, and we didn't even throw him the damn ball. That's what's frustrating. And I know you were talking about the potential, our defense looked better in this game, but my buddies at the Vikings sent me these offensive analytics, which I know you really like.
Yes.
And Minnesota is the lowest pass touchdown rate team in the entire NFL. They're second to worst in interception rate, and we didn't pick off Bridgewater. And they're third from worst in net yards per pass attempt. So this offense is pathetic that we faced. So I kind of...
Well, that's actually why I asked Steve to explain what he meant by looked better. Because if you look at just results, then things can get tainted. What he does, and something that's really hard to do, is was the team lined up in what looks to be the correct alignment? Did they execute in the alignment? Right. And we had situations against the Ravens where there were corners and safeties that were on completely separate pages of the playbook. Right. So as embarrassing as it is to admit that that is true, if you're not doing that anymore, that's a step forward. Yes, it's an embarrassing step forward, but it is, in fact, a step forward. So that's why I wanted that clarification, because you're right. Because the end result, if you're playing a big piece of shit team, you may look better because it's relative, right? You're playing a bunch of idiots. If they were playing the local high school team, they would beat the shit out of them, you know? But on the offensive side of the ball, I think your point is exactly right, and I think this is one of the things that Coach Arroyo's got to get out of his head. You don't let the defense dictate to you. Right, you set up your matchups that you want, and for people that love Gruden, that's great. For people who hated Gruden, he was usually pretty good about getting matchups, and Sean Payton does this as well. If you've got these guys that have physically dominating, attributes, height, strength, leaping ability, whatever it is, you get them opportunities. Minnesota had no fear. Minnesota rolled down into single high multiple times against this team. If I see single high and I've got Vincent Jackson somewhere, I don't give a shit what the play was. I don't give a shit. I'm checking him to a 9, and he's getting the ball. Go earn your money, you know? And that's the part that when I say that football can be really, really complicated, but sometimes it gets down to just simple. If I've got my 6'7 tight end on Oompa Loompa, fuck this play, right? I'm coming to you. And I get you back in the huddle. Hey, if Oompa Loompa's following you around, damn all this shit. And I just don't understand why you go get all of these great groceries. And you're like, you know what? I know we've got truffle butter and we got all this great stuff, but let's eat some ramen noodles. Doesn't make any sense.
I agree with you. So. And yes, it's a positive that the fact that defense was actually lining up where it was supposed to, because that was evident in previous weeks. But when I think fans jump at the opportunity and say, well, the defense only really gave up 13 points. But when you look at the individual stats and you look at the offensive efficiency that Minnesota was bringing into this game, it's not as impressive as what folks are saying, is that, well, the defense did their job, the offense didn't do their job. Well, you're still giving up 5.2 yards a carry to Jerick McKinnon, who played quarterback for Georgia Southern last year. You're allowing Cordarrelle Patterson. I was listening to Dekkerhoff, although I'm calling him Cordell. six receptions in this game. He had the max he had in any game this season was 4. If Teddy Bridgewater is not a rookie, if we're going against a different quarterback in this game, they would absolutely have picked this defense apart. There were so many opportunities that presented themselves. A couple plays where Greg Jennings was wide open and he just missed him. Where Charles Johnson was running down the seam, and that play I'd mentioned to you earlier
where
in the
Mason
chat
stopped.
Room, and Mason Foster stopped running on the 49-yard line, and Johnson's running completely wide open in the seam, and Bridgewater out threw him by like 2 yards. So I want to temper people's – you're right, and I'm glad that you got clarification on that. The defense was starting to line up appropriately, which thank God we got that, at least hopefully, moving forward. But – the plays were still there for Minnesota to make. They just didn't capitalize on a lot of the plays, and they still won the game.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Now, the thing you got to be careful of, the same way we can't use a transitive property to say, well, if we beat so-and-so and they beat so-and-so, then such-and-so. It monus ponens and formal logic and all that shit, and I don't mean to be geeky, but I'm kind of smart. So what we can't say, we did face Ben Roethlisberger, who's the only quarterback that has 2 500-yard passing games and beat the living dog shit out of Indianapolis, and he walked out with a loss.
Yeah.
Right? So I almost think of it like a intricate clock with a bunch of gears, you know, and we got really nice shiny gears, but right now there's something that's off and the gears are not interlocking. It's just like clinking, like you see in cartoons, right? They're not coming together. So the clock's not working. Something has to happen to get those teeth lined up so that all of a sudden this stops being this big piece of shit that's not doing anything. And they start to move in synchronicity and we start having a real defense. And I don't know what that magic is. Could it be pass rush? Could be, because that certainly disrupts everything, right? You get some pass rush, all of a sudden the quarterback's making less accurate throws. That gives us a chance, because there have been times where we've had pretty decent coverage and quarterbacks have made good throws. I know people like to think that it's just 7-on-7 and our guys are never near a receiver, because there have been absolute instances where that's true. But there have been times where our guys have been in pretty goddamn good coverage and quarterbacks have made good throws, right? That happens. It's called the pros, you know? But we've got to get something to click so that this will happen. But right now, who the fuck plays safety for this team, right? We got rid of Barron because he wasn't playing well and we could get something for him. I get it. Deshaun Goltz is not playing well. He's talking, which pisses me off. Listen, don't celebrate when you're losing. Don't talk when you're not playing well. Simple rules of life, right? Major Wright, Keith Tandy, what the fuck? What are we going to do at the safety position, which was one of our biggest problems? What are your thoughts about safety, Fish?
Not happy with Deshaun Goltz calling out the offense, basically, which is what he did after the game, and said, we did our job on defense and the offense didn't capitalize on opportunities.
Yep.
Do not like that at all. I know Peter Report and the guys from there are very high on Bradley McDougal. I know that the previous coaching staff was very high on him. And I liked him in training camp, Derek, and I think that was one of the guys that we had talked about in preseason, that this guy is kind of flashing.
Yep.
I think he's going to be given the opportunity. He got hurt early in the season. I think he's going to be given time. Honestly, how much worse can you get from what Mark Barron was doing? Because I think he played probably one good half of football this year, and that was against probably the first half against the Saints.
Yep.
Where it was pretty good, and then he freaking tanked at the end and,
yep,
and couldn't make a tackle. I'm confused at the comments by Coach Lovie Smith today about the fact that they're not building for the future by getting rid of two guys, but they didn't add any guys. So I don't know. That was confusing to me. I think you're going to see in this game a lot of Major Wright. I think you're going to see Deshaun Goltz, but I think this staff wants to move to giving Bradley McDougal the shot. I think this is the last year you'll see Deshaun Goltz in the Bucs uniform. I think that contract just needs to be unloaded.
Right.
But it can't get much worse, Derek, from what we've seen so far with those two guys. And I know Goldson was hurt and he had Major Wright at free safety, but you've got to give some of these other guys an opportunity, the younger guys, to see what they can do, whether that's Tandy, whether that's Bradley McDougal, and see if they can make a difference on this football team and just make a play. Because that's really all that they have to do, make a damn play.
Well, and we had talked about it before with Barron and Goldson. Sometimes I think we get enamored with the names and what they've done or where they were drafted or whatever. And if they're not following the script, if they're not doing what they're supposed to, either because they don't want to, they don't understand how to, whatever the reason is, they're not being coached properly. There's a bunch of reasons. It could, well, not a bunch. It's probably like four or five. But if it's any of those, you may get better even if you get lesser talent. You put a major writer in there, you put a Keith Tanney in there, who not necessarily physically as gifted, not necessarily as impactful in one-on-one ways. But if they're told to be, you know, in the deep third, they're going to be in the deep third. They're not going to be covering the flat. You know, he's going to be where the fuck he's supposed to be. So whoever those guys are, I think you're right. Maybe we'll see some of those things. What I don't understand, Deshaun pisses me off because I watch what Cam Chancellor does in Seattle. I watch what Pete Carroll and their staff have done with the hawk tackling approach. They have allowed their defense to not be taken out of football. I watched the highlight in the Detroit Atlanta game. Did you see the pass down the seam that allowed the Lions to drive for the final score? It was about a 22-yard pass down the hash mark. Receiver catches it in the middle of three defenders. And they essentially let him catch the ball because they're all afraid to hit him. Right? The game is changing. Was that Seattle? Cam Chancellor knocks his kidneys out. Right? He's done. Right? And we're not doing that either. So I'm a little bit far afield here, but that's absolutely driving me nuts too. Fish, I appreciate calling in. I know it's late for you. I think you were on another call as well. If you guys don't know who Fish is, you need to follow him out there on Bucks Brief. It's at Bucks Brief, yeah, on Twitter?
Correct, sir. Appreciate it.
At Bucks Brief on Twitter. Get on his podcast as well. They do a great job on their podcast. They have Gil Arcia, Luke Easterling, and I think he had Justin Pawlowski the other day as well. Great guests on his show as well. He's out there doing things. Apparently, he's going to a new sponsor. I'm sure he'll announce that very soon. And maybe we'll do a little road trip to go check him out. Maybe you can get out there and see the watch party with us if you can bring the family out this weekend, Fish.
I'm trying my best, sir, to get out there. You know how it is on the weekends with kids.
I sure do, my friend. All right, man. Well, take care, and we'll catch you on Twitter.
All right, Derek. Thanks, Ben.
See
Have a good night.
You too. All right, I got a little bonus call in there. I said I was going to end early. I didn't. I'm going to end late. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. I will end us on Factory Sadness because that's fucking awesome. We will be at our live event, like I mentioned, on Sunday. So get out there, bring your food for the Claiborne family Sack Hunger campaign. We're going to be collecting food at the Wing Houses. And at all of our events, if you want to get one of those orange t-shirts, I think we have about 60 or so of them left. So make sure you bring your donations, minimum donation of $10. If you have out-of-towners who want them and you want to be nice and thought of highly, then you can buy them one and then ship it to them. We're just not going to do that because we're lazy as fuck. So anyway, for the entire What the Buck crew, I want to thank you guys for all the things that you do. And we will see you guys real soon this weekend or maybe even Friday night if you go to Dress to Impress it at Wing House, because I sure as hell will be there after I take my kids trick-or-treating. So look for mustaches, look for fun, and hopefully look for a Bucks win against the Cleveland Browns. No, I'm not going to do any predictive bullshit because right now this team's not even playing football.
Hey, Browns. Mike Polk, season ticket holder. Killer game in Houston today.
Well, thank God we built you. What a blessing for the community.
You are wasting valuable space on our majestic shoreline, and what do we get out of it from you? 10 miserable games a year, including 2 preseason games that I have to pay for, and 1 shitty Kenny Chesney concert. Do you understand that it is actually statistically harder for a team to be this consistently bad than it is for them to occasionally accidentally be good?
The probability is staggering.
Did you happen to see that Packers-Chargers game today? It's like they're playing a different sport than you are.
And here's what you have to understand. We don't even expect you to be good. We just want you to be watchable.
Do you have any idea how low our expectations are?
We don't expect you to win the Super Bowl. We just want you to look better than a Division III high school team.
And listen, I know that there are way more important things in life than football, but you are supposed to be our pleasant distraction from those things.
But all we do is pay you money to put us in a bad mood every week.
You are a factory of sadness!
I'll see you Sunday.